Hey, what's up, Blazer fans? Welcome to We Have a Take, the What podcast. I am Tara Bowen Biggs, and I am joined by Rose Harding. Hello, Rose.
Hello, Tara. How are you doing?
Pretty good.
Just so everyone knows, we are currently recording during a game, which is maybe the first time we've ever done that. And I'm very tempted to just like have it on while I'm recording, but I will.
You can totally do that. I can't do that because my internet isn't strong enough, but you should totally have it on. I have like the little, my Trailblazers app on, but you know how it is. Every time you go to look at it, you have to like get the splash screen and it takes like 5 minutes to actually see what's going on. So I would encourage you to go ahead and have it on. So you can tell me like when the shade, at what point the Shaedon Sharpe dunk comes.
It does. It always comes. I don't know what time Shaedon Sharpe time is, but it always comes around.
Thank God.
Let's start off with our icebreaker. What is something that will keep the rest of the season in perspective for you? Last 20 games or so.
Okay. So could go a couple ways. There's a lot going on in the league. You and I were chatting about that before we got on.
There's a lot happening.
There's a lot happening. And so compared to what is happening to other teams and what other fan bases are going through, the fact that we're just trying to figure out like why aren't Justice Winslow and Yusuf Nurkic playing, I feel like, okay, that's the kind of drama that I can get through. But I think what the thing that is going to kind of help me keep it in perspective, this is a visual, so apologies for people who can't see it. So
you mean to everybody but me,
right? So I'm showing you my replica 2022 NBA Summer League championship ring, which our sweet boys won this past summer. Trendon Watford championship MVP. This ring, I'm gonna use it for luck, and it's gonna get me through. So what happened was the Blazers gave this away one night for a prize for a section, and my section that I was in won it. And I wasn't actually there at that game. I had given my ticket away. And so the person that I gave my ticket to, she was so sweet and so kind. She and her fiance were there, and she really, really wanted me to have the ring. And I just was like so tickled that she wanted. I was like, no, you can keep it. And then she was like, no, I want you to have it. And I was like, because you know what? Nobody loves Summer League more than me. I'm so excited. I've been sharing it and showing it off to everybody I see. And I'm just going to hold on to it. And I'm going to remember. Honestly, I'm going to tie it back. You know, I love watching the young guys play.
It's like your favorite.
This team is full of young guys. And whether or not they're going to take them to the promised land, especially in the next 22 games, starting to maybe sure we're not gonna, you know, go all the way to the end of that path, but I'm gonna enjoy that, and I'm gonna hold on to that, and I'm going to, as long as he's playing as well, I really want to see Damian get some chemistry going with at least a couple of these guys, like Shaedon, Trendon. You know, watching Trendon and Shaedon together has really been fun, I think, for me most of the time. Yeah. Trendon's kind of like turning into like the protector, you know, kind of like how Yusuf Nurkic kind of took on that role or whatever. And Trendon kind of doing that a little bit. So anyway, that's a long, long answer. My NBA Summer League championship replica ring. It has like little fake crystals in it. It's amazing. It's so fun. That's what's going to keep me going. Going to keep things in perspective for me.
I hope one year you and I get to go to Summer League together. We should go to Summer League and figure out like going to the games and stuff. I know it's becoming more of like a thing, and people now, like, you know, it used to just be like a bunch of guys in a gym and there weren't that many fans that came, you know, not that long ago. But now I feel like it's becoming more of a thing and people are excited.
Yeah. It's gotten a lot bigger. I went either 5 or 6 years. And every year it got bigger and bigger and bigger. It remained fun. The last year I went was the year before the pandemic shut down. It was big, but it was still, you know, $35 for a ticket. Mm-hmm. And you could watch games all day long and just see NBA players like wandering around.
That sounds so awesome. And they're all like the new guys that you don't even know that well.
Yeah. And like every block is spectacular because they're all playing for their lives. And so when they block it into the 10th row. And every missed dunk is the biggest missed dunk you've ever seen in your life because they are just playing their hearts out. And it's just so fun to watch.
That's so great.
What about you?
Okay, for me, like, so I know that a lot of Blazer fans around this point in the season, like, they steal their expectations where they're like, we're tanking or we're not tanking. I don't know. Like, I feel like a lot of people get into like the self-preservation mode where they start to like worry about what happens if the end of the season doesn't go well and we're like scraping into the playoffs or maybe even not even in the playoffs. I don't even know. Like, I mean, usually when Dame scrapes, he still scrapes himself into like the eighth seed. So, but I was thinking the other day when I saw the news from our friend Woj that when Myers Leonard signed his second 10-day contract with the Milwaukee Bucks, I was like, you know what? It's okay if this whole season goes poorly because you can come back from anything. Mr. Myers Leonard had quite the flame out on his way out of the NBA. And that dude just signed his second 10-day with the Milwaukee Bucks. And you know what? Maybe that man will see a ring. Who knows? I'm just saying, you can come back from anything. And it wasn't even that long ago that that happened, where that happened, like where that thing with the Twitch thing happened. Like, you can turn it around so quick if you want. So, if I know that, I mean, I know that we feel a certain way about what happened with Myers Leonard, but if he can come back that quickly and be a contender, so can we. Because to my knowledge, no other Blazers have yelled a racial slur into a microphone anytime recently.
Yeah, and made it onto a team that might win the championship.
Yeah.
I just The idea of him winning a championship before Damian just hurts my heart.
I can't even. When Pat Connaughton won, I'm like, I mean, good for you, but also like, Although I go back and forth because I like, you know, there's these people that are like, rings are everything, you know, like rings are nothing, like it defines your career or whatever. But then you hear these same people that are like, oh, well, that guy won a ring, yeah, but like he didn't really contribute that much. So, and I'm like, well, which is it? Which is it? The rings only count for the starting five? Like, make up your mind. You are on that team, you're on that team. You want a ring. Like, is that what matters or is it not? I'm very confused here. But either way, I'm very happy for them. Good for them. I'm happy for everyone who's ever won a ring, no matter how many minutes they did or didn't play. But I just don't want Myers Leonard to win one before Dame because they were drafted the same year and like, bleh.
I mean, I have a ring.
Yeah, that's true. You want a ring. You want a ring before Dame, apparently.
Yeah, so I mean, who am I to say? Well, so my question, I have a question about just like this year in general. Like I keep coming there's so much debate out there about the coach, right? That's kind of like one of the things. And I can't tell it look but like I don't know enough to the only coaching that I really know is like what Stotts's coaching looked like. I don't have a lot to compare it to. I've never followed any other team as closely as I had the Blazers or any other coach or whatever. But what I do know is that Terry Stotts teams could beat bad teams. He could get them far enough through the game that they could beat a bad team. And I see the Blazers this year really struggling with that. And I'm just going back and forth between, is it like who's on the court? Because like they are so bereft of like when Yusuf between Yusuf and Josh Hart, that's like 19 rebounds a game.
Yeah. We
Gone.
traded our best rebounder. Josh Hart was like our best rebounder. We traded our best rebounder.
Yeah, but even with mediocre teams, they could still beat teams that were worse. And it's
Yeah.
just that there's nobody worse than the Blazers right now in terms of talent, or is it because the coach can't figure out how to get them across the finish line?
Well, and the other thing to that same point is that Terry Stotts teams didn't blow big leads, but what they often did was help other teams blow big leads. Like, you know what I mean? Because, like, remember when, like, we used to see the big, like, crunch time, Dame time, fourth quarter where they would miraculously score 13 points in 2 minutes and be back in a game that they weren't going to win? Like, when is the last time we saw that happen? We've been on the other end of that quite a few times this season, and that feels really bad. And that makes me wonder if that's a coaching problem, because blowing that many big leads seems like a coaching problem to me, because you were able to score the points. You just weren't able to, like, protect the lead. I don't know.
Well, and then I just go out to, like, but he's not out there on the court, you know? So like, how is it necessarily his fault when he's not the one who's playing?
Yeah. I'll say, so I pay a lot of attention to what I think players are feeling, which is, like, kind of a, that's not a thing that I expect anyone else to be doing, but I watch a lot of guys when they pass up looks. I'm, like, really looking at guys who pass up looks.
Okay.
And sometimes when I, like, watch certain lineups play, I'm like, none of you know who's supposed to shoot the ball. No one knows who should, like, that's, so sometimes they're over passing the ball into bad shots and they're like, oh, I'm not shooting the ball. And sometimes I feel like it's clear that Jeremy is the number one option on the floor, but Jeremy doesn't have the look. And it feels like maybe some of the other guys don't have the green light to shoot, and they're just trying to force it to Jeremy or something. And I'm like, all these guys, like, driving into the paint to take a contested mid-range when they were, like, kind of open on the perimeter. I'm like, what is this? And, like, I don't know, like, driving with no plan feels kind of bad. And like, seeing guys question whether they should be shooting or not feels bad. And I feel like that's, like, I mean, remember how it feels like it was forever ago, even though it was just, like, a few weeks ago. Like, that's how Josh Hart looked at the end of his time in Portland. He looked like he didn't know if he was supposed to shoot the ball. And I don't know if he was told he wasn't supposed to shoot the ball, but he felt like he wasn't supposed to shoot the ball. And cut to now, when I watch him play against the Knicks, I'm like, or play as a Knick, excuse me. And I'm like, he knows what his role is there.
Yeah, knowing what your role is, that's a big thing, because yeah, there is more hesitation than there was at the beginning of the season. There's lots of passing, so we're going to be talking about, like, updating stats, like the stats that I've been keeping track of.
Yes.
So, like, one of the ones I could just probably just go into that right now, like, one of the things that I've been tracking all year was number of passes. So just to wind it back for just one sec, at the beginning of the year, we talked about things that we were going to be watching, and we were watching for things to see if things were different in terms of how the team played, because we didn't know what kind of a coach Billups was going to be. We didn't know what his schemes were, because last year was just like, we had to throw it out. So we're like, okay, this year he's got his team. He's got the players that he wants. He's got the players that he likes, ostensibly. So now he can really, like, make things happen the way he wants them to happen. And we were going to compare them to how things were stats last year, simply to see how things were different, not to, like, lay any judgment on it, but just see, like, how the play is different. So one of the things that we talked about was passes. And this is something that has definitely changed. And it's interesting to wonder, like, has it gone too far the other way? So let me just give you, go ahead.
No, when we started talking about tracking passes at the beginning of the season, I was like, not all passes are good passes, because sometimes they're passes where, like, people are just too hesitant to shoot, which, like, you know, you watch the Warriors and you're like, oh, look at this, like, free flowing basketball, and every pass is good, and they find an open man, and then the open guy takes a shot or whatever. And the Blazers, I'm like, are they just passing because they're passing? And sometimes you're like, sometimes you pass too much and you don't have any time to do anything. And whoever gets stuck with the ball has to be the hot potato and just chuck it up and hope it hits the rim, because it's going to be a shot clock violation.
Yeah. And I think they have had shot clock violations where they were passing it, where they were passing it too much. So, yeah, we're not necessarily into the passing for the sake of passing. And also, you know, when you have a player like Damian Lillard, mostly it's pass it to him. Yeah. As we saw during the 71-point game, it was just pass it to him. Get it to him.
Yeah. And I feel like increases, like, an increase in passing should probably lead to an increase in assists, right? Those two stats feel like they should be related.
Yeah.
So if the passing is good, then the assists are going up. That's great. If the passing is increasing, but the assists aren't, mm-hmm. like, what are we passing for? Not to get good shots, apparently.
Well, let's look at what they were in 2021, the last year of Stotts' season. The Blazers were 30th, last, dead last in the league in both passing and assists. They averaged 244 passes, and they averaged 21.3 assists. So dead last in both categories. So fast forward to right now, through 63 games, they are averaging 278 passes.
Okay.
So what is that? 34 more passes?
That's a big leap.
That's a big jump. And it's down a little bit. Like they were up and around in the mid 280s for a big chunk of the season. So it's gone back down a little bit. So that puts them at 17th in the league, just to like figure out the perspective. So they went from being, you know, dead last 30th to middle. So that feels like a significant jump as well. So just like 35 passes a game seems significant.
Yeah, for sure. Like, I would agree.
That seems like a coach who's trying to get them to move the ball more.
Yeah.
And assists have also gone up. I've written it wrong in this spreadsheet. It's not 42 assists a game. It's 24.1 assists per game. So that's up from, what did I say it was before? 21.3.
Mm-hmm.
And it's now 24.1.
And where does that rank them?
So that makes them 21st in the league. So not dead as last.
But not as big of a jump as the passes.
Not quite as big of a jump.
So I bet you that I would hazard a guess that passes increased, assists increased some, but also I bet you shooting has decreased.
Mm.
Field goal percentage or something.
Yeah. Field goal percentage. Or just like, I mean, if their plays are more complicated and they involve more, because like how many times do we remember just seeing like CJ curl, Dame kicks it out, Dame curls, CJ kicks it out. And that was like the sum total of the pass.
or a pick and roll.
Right. Or a pick and roll. And there's more, especially with Trendon that I've been seeing, there's been more instances of Damian relocating, which is at least one extra pass the way that he's been doing. I mean, I'm not Caitlin Cooper. I can't talk beautifully about all of these things, but I have noticed with different personnel in there, like different guys playing center with Damian, and, you know, small ball center is a completely different thing than we've seen before. You know, that maybe that is also upping the passing a little bit. So this is all to say that it looks like there is more there's definitely is more passing. And we don't know if that, you know, is a good thing given where they are in the standings, but it is different. We can definitely say it's different.
It's different for sure. Also, I mean, it makes perfect sense because like for anyone who watched Terry Stotts basketball, they know that we're looking at very different schemes, right? Because like Terry Stotts used to run like so many pick and rolls, with the Dame Nurk pick and roll was like what we did all day long.
Yeah. And I feel like what I'm seeing is, especially by the end, because like by the end, the Blazers were last in passing, assists, and also running how much they ran on the floor and the number of dunks. So what Terry Stotts did was he rode out what worked to the very bitter end.
Yeah.
Those things worked, and or you know pick and roll worked, Damon isolation worked, and he just rode that out to the bitter end. And now I feel like the coach is like, he's still like doesn't know what he has. He's still trying things. He's still throwing things out there to see what sticks on the walls. And as a result, like the metrics are different than they were during Stotts' era, but we don't know if the results do not appear to be even as good.
Yeah. This comes down to like one of those questions. It's like more of a philosophical question of like, how patient do we think that we should be with a new coach figuring out how to be a head coach during the end of Dame's prime. Like, you know what I mean? Like, and I don't know the right answer to that. I don't know how management feels about it. I don't know how their fans feel about it, but like, that feels like we don't like, feels like a fundamental question of like, what is Chauncey Billups' ceiling as a head coach?
Mm-hmm.
And how long are we willing to wait around to see it? Because he is not a head coach on the Dame timeline. He is not mm-hmm. a made head coach who has like a distinct style and a skill set that we've seen like him display on another team. Like,
mm-hmm.
yeah. It's funny, his first assistant is.
Mm-hmm.
His first assistant has that, but you know, Chauncey Billups, no.
Every day goes by, I get more annoyed at, you know, all the various poison pills that were left behind by the previous GM.
Oh, I know.
Like, they chose a coach with like basically no experience. He could be a great coach in 6 years. Like, yeah. I am completely open to the idea that after putting in 5 years of trial and error, year six, it could be like, oh, he's really starting to figure it out. But like, you're right. We don't have 6 years. And, you know, maybe, you know, yeah, I don't know what to do about that, because like, they still have, I keep tweeting, good news is after this year, we only have 2 to 3 more years left on the contract, because they gave him 4 years guaranteed plus one more. And it's like,
why did they do that? Oh my God. Why did they do that?
Yeah.
Yeah. It feels like, you know, when you, well, I don't know if you know this, when you were in a relationship for a really long time and then you break up, but you like, you were together for years and you lived together and like, you had stuff that you co-owned, and it's like, you just keep finding their your house for months and months and months. And you're like, this wasn't even mine. Why is it still in my closet? And it's like, there's nothing wrong. Like, exactly. Like, you've moved on from it psychologically, but like, mm-hmm. there's stuff just keeps popping up and it's annoying. You're like, I don't want to deal with this. You throw out your own crap. I'll throw out mine.
That's a lot what it feels like.
So we keep finding Neil Olshay's old shoes in our closet. Yeah. We're like, bro, we broke up like a year ago.
We keep finding his starched collars and his big fat wide ties. He liked. Okay, let's turn to a funner one. A more fun one. Funner, more fun. I don't know. In 2021, the Blazers were dead last in dunks. 2.5 per game. Like, they were so far below the next people close to them, it was like not even funny. They are currently 20th in the league. They were at 19th. They held strong at 19th in the league for quite a while, but they're back down to 20th with 4.42 dunks per game. So we're getting two more dunks a game, and at least one of them is Shaden. So that counts for like 2.5 dunks per game. So there's more. I don't know if it's personnel. I don't know if there's more room underneath the rim because of the schemes that they're running, but there is more dunking, and I praise whoever it is that is bringing that to us, because I am very grateful that we are getting more dunks. I'm greedy. I'd like 6 dunks a game. Is that too much to ask? I don't know.
I don't think so. I mean, if we increase Shaden's minutes, we could probably get at least another Shaden dunk. Also, I don't know if you've noticed this, but have you noticed that like in the second half of the season, it feels like Dame's more interested in dunking?
He's certainly in the last couple weeks.
He feels definitely like interested in showing that he is not old yet.
I love it. I love it. And it's like, do you feel like your ability to see the game is getting somewhat skewed by the fact that Damian scores like 40 points every night? And if he only scores 35, you're like, what the hell?
I mean, kind of, but like, there's always a point in the season where I feel this way, because there's always a moment, and it's usually in like, I don't know, late winter, where it feels like Dame kicks it into a new gear and he's just an unstoppable scoring god.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, it reminds me of, was it last season? I think it was, no, it was 2 seasons ago, I guess, where like Nas told that story about Dame, where he was like, Dame said to him, like, you know, we're making the playoffs. Like, you watch.
Uh-huh.
Like, I'm going to, you watch, I'm going to do something that people haven't seen before. You just watch. And then they made the playoffs because Dame did this incredible push. And I was like, never doubt Dame again. But also, you're right. I do get in this moment where I'm like, well, he only scored 35 points. Was that an off night? Is he feeling okay?
Oh no, is his abdomen okay? Well, it's kind of the same way for dunks now, because I'm so used to how high Shaden dunks that when I watch other players, I'm like, was it like, I'm not sure that I'm seeing right.
Yeah.
Like, Shaden just dunks, jumps so high.
Also, remember when Shaden came out with his, like, that one game where he had, like, braids and a headband?
Oh, that was so confusing.
It was so confusing. I was like, who is this flying so
high?
I
thought he was Josh Hart. I was like, I didn't understand what was going on.
And Josh Hart grew.
And then somebody was like, no, my whole row, we were trying to figure out what's going on. Okay, so anyway, back to the statistics. So, okay, dunks, they have two more. They're getting two more dunks per game. Yay. Mm-hmm. Assists and passes have both gone up. The next one is rebounds. And we talked about that briefly. And it's hard to even know, like, can we even talk about that with having lost, Yusuf and Josh Hart. What is going on with Yusuf Nurkic and Josh and Justice Winslow? Like, why?
I don't know. I feel like Justice Winslow hasn't played for the Blazers this season, and I know that's not true. I don't remember the last time.
It was early. It was like mid-December,
and it's supposed to be a sprain, right?
Yeah.
And then it was like, it was so crazy because then we got, like, last week we had Anfernee come back from that, like, sprain where I was like, oh, he's gone for weeks and mm-hmm. weeks. And then he came back 2 weeks later, and I was like, are you sure? But then he re-injured it.
Yeah.
But I was, like, genuinely shocked to see Ant back out there while Justice Winslow is still, like, wearing his street clothes.
Yeah, and we're not getting any updates. It's kind of like with Gary, we just stopped getting updates, you know? Yeah. And like, I would kind of think that the organization would be sensitive to the fact that we're all sort of on edge. You know, yeah. So maybe them not addressing it and not seeing anything, maybe that's like their silent signal that it's like, we're tanking, but Dame won't stop playing. So this is how we're doing it because it's working.
Yeah, maybe. You know,
give Dame time to play alongside those young guys to see which one of those young guys could be the future, or see if any of them, you know, may be good enough to, like, potentially, you know, be used in trades next year. Like, Dame doesn't want to sit, like, oh, maybe there was an agreement. I don't know. It's just so weird that we have gotten no updates on this.
But,
like, guys.
Out of all the people that, like, sit while you're tanking, like, Justice Winslow, like, I mean, that dude, like, sometimes they were playing him in garbage time. That's not the guy you shut down for tanking.
Like, I mean, Justice Winslow could bring a lot to this team. He could help this team a lot right now.
Sure. Sure, but I just, like, if I'm going to soft tank, I don't soft tank by benching Justice Winslow, but playing Jeremy Grant for 35 minutes a game.
Oh, that's true. That could be the next thing that they do, but they don't need to. You know what I mean?
Yeah, it's just, I don't know. I mean, I kind of wonder if, like, more, like, of what we're seeing right now is, like, the Blazers management in the lab looking at which of the guys that are potentially could be movable and or re-signed this summer mm-hmm. are worth keeping by having them all play right now with Dame and picking Dame's brain on mm-hmm. which of these guys do you want and which guys should we move on from, because like Matisse and Cam Reddish and Kevin Knox, those guys are all new, and Matisse is going to be a restricted free agent next year, so they got to decide what they mm-hmm. want to do with him, and, like, these are all, and, like, they want to re-sign Jeremy, and they want Jeremy and Dame out there and a little bit of Ant, because they're like, you're going to be our core, who's going to play with you next year, play with them now and see if you can work it out together. I don't know, it's just an idea.
Mm-hmm. No, it makes a lot of sense. Your ideas always make way more sense than mine. You're so thoughtful. You think things through. I just, like, blah.
You definitely don't.
It makes sense. You know, because Nurkic already, we know what his his contract is, and maybe Justice is just not part of the future, and so they're like, we're not gonna, you know, send him out there. But to just send Dame out there night after night after night without, like, I mean, it's, I don't want to say that none of the other guys are helping, because they're obviously doing the best that they can, but there's just such major glaring flaws in the you know, in the needs. There's so many major gaps, let's say. I don't know, these guys are flaws. There's major gaps in what is needed to put out a team that's going to compete. And, but, you know, maybe Dame wants to play, like I said, play with those younger guys. And also, you know, thank goodness that they're playing with a couple of good players, because last year we saw what happens when they don't play with good players, and they had to, like, figure it out. So at least they have Jeremy and Damian out there with them to learn from.
Yeah. And I, so this is the other thing that I was thinking about. So you know how Dame is very good about, like, I don't want to say he's like, I think he's very honest when he gives interviews, but he also would never say something that, like, made his teammates feel uneasy about him. Like, Dame would probably never ever say, like, I'm just playing alongside these guys so that I could see who really fits with the team and who doesn't. And, you know, when the time comes to make moves this summer, that I'll sit together with Joe Cronin and the leadership group, and we'll decide who we're going to keep and who we're going to move on from. Like, Dave would never say that. And Dave would never, ever, like, indicate that that's what he's doing. But Joe Cronin, when he talks about making moves and stuff, he is very clear that he keeps Damian in the loop. He's teaching him the cap. He's teaching him about what it takes to manage a team. And so you know that he's more involved in that stuff than Dame lets on. And maybe he's going to be involved in when it comes time to sit down with Chauncey and Joe Cronin and whoever, and decide, like, which of these guys are we going to spend money on, and which of these guys are we going to move on from, and who are we going to try to bring in when they leave. Like, he might want that, but he would never say that.
Well, it's also 100% consistent with everything that we've ever seen about him, his desire to help everybody be better.
Yeah.
And being on the court, especially playing at an elite level, you know, is going to make those guys better, unless he's so good that he scores 71 points and all they can do is sit and watch. You know, it's kind of like a blessing and a curse.
Maybe he's also going for the scoring title while he's at it, you know? Maybe he wants to win the scoring title this year. I don't think he's ever won it.
No, he hasn't. Might as well. So. Might as well. Okay, there's one other stat that I want to talk about that we were tracking. And that is distance run on the court.
Oh, yeah. Who's
another one.
Off the ball.
Yeah, another one that they were 30th in the league with the last stats team. I mean, they were just,
which,
like,
is crazy, because Dame and CJ were in the top five. Yeah. But everybody else stood around, apparently.
But the whole team, yeah. They were at 17.5. They're 17.05, so just a hair over 17 miles for everybody running. And they're up to 17.59, which is the 22nd in the league. So another bump, but not a huge bump.
Yeah. But I wonder if it's more of like a, so CJ's gone now. So CJ's not running off the ball like that. I mean, maybe that's more of an indication of, like, that they're still playing Anfernee in similar ways. And then also the rest, I don't know. Like, I don't feel a lot of movement from some guys. I feel a lot of spread the floor, stand in your corner and wait for the ball to come from you from some guys.
Yeah. We were seeing more movement earlier on. And we see a little bit more in that small ball lineup. But yeah, they're not, you know, it used to be like they were so little in passing, in running, that it was just like one guy in isolation doing so much work. So the actual profile of, like, scoring and movement, or the actual profile of ball movement and player movement, does seem to have changed.
Yeah.
And so the coach seems to be doing something different, and whether or not it's working, we shall see. Maybe next year it'll all click.
All I can think about, though, is, like, this is something that we weren't really tracking the stat. This is all about eye tests for what I'm about to say. But, like, increased passing, yes. Increased turnovers, holy heck. So many turnovers this season. Like, And it makes me wonder if, like, we just haven't quite figured that part out to make that as to make the passing and movement as impactful as it could be, because we're still working out how to, like, move as one as a team.
I feel like it's gotten better, because there was a point where it was just like, did we get more assists than turnovers? Okay, good. But I feel like it's gone down a little bit. But yeah, and they just make them in the, like, the most inopportune times. It's like, come on, guys.
Yeah. And it, like, sometimes it's like the cascading effect where it's like turnover after turnover mm-hmm. after turnover.
Do you like what you're saying about a Matisse Thybulle? I kind of am really enjoying what I'm seeing out of him.
I really like Matisse Thybulle, and I really hope he's a Blazer next year. I think he suits us personality wise, mm-hmm. and I feel like he's getting the chance to play, like, slightly different basketball. Like, he obviously has the green light to shoot, and he's shooting well.
Mm-hmm.
That's great. We want those, like, those wings to shoot the ball on this team, and yeah. I guess there just wasn't enough shots in a game when you were playing with Joel Embiid and James Harden.
Well, he'll have to get used to it again if everybody on Twitter is right. Have you seen the rising movement for Joel Embiid to Portland?
I have seen that because of that picture that Dame posted from All-Star Weekend of them, like, talking in their shirts, right? Yes. Which yeah. is how we got, was how Jeremy Grant arrived here, was yeah. with when that was it Nurk and Josh Hart mm-hmm. and Jeremy Grant talking through their shirts after a game. But I kind of wonder if like what's going to happen in Philly, because that's like an aging team with Doc mm-hmm. and, like, I don't know, Doc is kind of a strong flavor of a coach.
Mm-hmm.
Like, what is, like, you have James Harden and Tobias Harris and Joel Embiid, and it's still just, I don't know. They haven't even made it to the finals, right?
No. Yeah, I wonder. It's weird because they keep seeming like a really good team, and then they struggle to make it to the finals.
I mean, that's how his Clippers felt when he was the coach of the Clippers too, remember?
Mm-hmm.
Some, like, that Clippers team with Blake Griffin and Chris Paul, like, that was a crazy fun mm-hmm. team, but they never quite got over the hump.
Mm-hmm. Well, also, like, most teams don't get over the hump.
Right.
Most sure. teams in the last, 10 years have run into either LeBron James or the Golden State Warriors. Golden Warriors.
The Golden in the last Warriors. Decade.
That's kind of, how it's gone. So they whenever you run into either one of those, that's when you're out. But I don't know. I think it's interesting, but I'm not even going to give it 1 second. I'm not going to give it more than, like, 1 second of thought. Well, let's say 30 seconds of thoughts per day, because it's just so unlikely. And, like, why get my hopes up when something that is unlikely is, and if it happens, that's how excited I will be. But I'm just not going to spend any time trying to make it work in my head.
I think that's wise, honestly, because there's so many rumors that we've loved to entertain because, they're fun.
Yeah.
That have never panned out. Like, if I will go back into, like, the archive of my brain and I look at all of the rumors that I've entertained over the years, like, half of them are hilarious.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Kevin Durant was coming to Portland last summer. Just that recently, Kevin Durant was coming here.
Right. LeBron. Remember LeBron was coming here?
Because, yeah, Dame needs a third option. I have that sticker up somewhere.
It's like, yeah, it's very silly.
Yeah.
Okay. We should move on.
Okay.
Because we have Kevin Knox to talk about. I talked about Matisse last time.
Mm-hmm.
Tell me what you learned about Kevin Knox, because I don't know anything about Kevin Knox.
Okay. I am pleased that I get to tell you about Kevin Knox. But before we get to talking about Kevin, when I realized I was going to be doing him, I realized I needed to give myself a Florida geography lesson, because Kevin Knox is from Florida, as is Anfernee Simons, and as is Nasir Little. So we have three guys from Florida who are also very, very close in age. Nas is the oldest, and Kevin is only, like, 6 weeks younger than him. And then Nas is, like, a few more months. So they grew up in Florida playing around the same time. But I was like, where is everything in Florida? So let me give you a little Florida geography lesson. If I don't know, do you already know Florida, how Florida is laid out and where everything is?
I mean, I know a little bit about it because I have family in Florida. But you can talk about this because I probably need a brush up. And also, Florida's a little bit of a foreign country, so please enlighten us.
I only know everything I know about Florida. I got from the John D. McDonald books that I've been reading all of my life. There's a character named Travis McGee, and there's like, I don't know, 25 novels about him. He's like a like private eye kind of character, and they all take place in Florida. He's based out of Bahia Mar, so that's all I know is like Bahia Mar. Like that's the only thing I know. So, when you look at Florida, we're not talking about the panhandle. We're talking about the other part of Florida. At the top, like northeastern corner, towards the top is Jacksonville. And Nasir Little actually grew up most of his life in a suburb south of Jacksonville called Orange Park. So that's where Nas is from. And then when he was a junior in high school, he started playing for a team in Orlando. So if you're up in Jacksonville, which is up in like the northeast corner of the state, and then you drive south for about 2 hours, it's about the same amount of distance between Tacoma and Portland. So you drive south about 2 hours, you get to Orlando. Orlando is a little bit inland. But at that point, there's like lots of other water around there. So Orlando is where Anfernee is from. And so Anfernee's like he changed his graduation date and his grade a little bit in there somewhere. So I can't quite line up whether or not they played each other in high school, but I was in like looking up all the prep scores trying to figure out if they had ever played each other in high school. So they're about 2 hours apart, Jacksonville to the north, and then Orlando, which is about in the middle of Florida. And then if you drive southwest, you hit Tampa, and it's about between Portland and Corvallis. You would get to Tampa, and Tampa is where Kevin Knox is from. And again, Kevin and Anfernee are like 6 weeks apart and grew up in the same. So when I was at the fan event, that's what I was asking Kevin Knox about, is if he remembered whether or not they played against each other. Okay. So our friend Kevin, his dad, so Kevin Knox is Kevin Knox the second. His dad is Kevin Knox Sr., who was a Florida State football player, and they won the championship while he played for them. And he played for one season with the Cardinals in Phoenix. And that is actually where Kevin was born. His mom was is Michelle, and she was a volleyball player, so two athletes. And Kevin has three siblings who are all younger than him: Kobe, Carter, and Ashley. Kobe and Carter are both up and coming rising basketball stars, and Ashley plays basketball and volleyball. She's still like real young, like I think she might be like a freshman in high school. But his brothers are quickly going to be on the scene, and his dad worked for in Florida as in for the housing authority as a youth sports director. So he was like really involved in youth sports and youth development. And his mom was a social worker in the schools. So that's a little bit about his family. So yeah, he was born on August 11th, 1999.
Tell me the names of his siblings again.
Kobe and Carter, both with a K. And Ashley is his little sister.
Kobe is off. I feel like that's got to be a Kobe Bryant
Yeah.
thing.
Yeah. They named the first son after the dad and then the second son after Kobe. And I don't know who Carter's named after.
Vince Carter, maybe.
Yeah. Vince Carter with a K. Okay. So in high school, he played, like I said, the same time as Nas and Anfernee. And he played for Tampa Christian for the first couple of years. He put of high school, he played football and basketball. But then in his sophomore year, he made the national team for USA basketball. And so that's where he decided that he was going to be all in for basketball. He was also really tall. He grew pretty young. So he was about like 6'7", 6'8" at the time. So that was when he decided to go all in for basketball, and he stopped playing the football. He was a 5-star recruit. He was a really impressive, really, really impressive basketball player in high school, and he got a lot of attention. He was, by some accounts, ranked as the number 9 prospect overall of his class and the number 2 small forward. That was in 2017. In high school, he averaged 28.5 points and 11.3 rebounds per game in his last season, and his school won the state championship. He also played in the EYBL circuit, where he made a lot of impact. A lot of people noticed him. And he was named a McDonald's All-American. And then he also, again, represented USA Basketball in the U17 World Championship and in the America's Cup Championship. Cool. Got a lot of attention in high school. So much attention that he even got an offer from a professional team in China for $1.4 million for him to come play with them after high school.
Right, because they don't have any rules about having to go to college.
Right, so he could have gone and played in China for a year and then come back for the draft. But obviously, he declined. He eventually chose to go to Kentucky. And he played on a really good Kentucky team. It was stacked. They had Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, Hamidou Diallo, Wenyen Gabriel.
I forgot Diallo went to Kentucky.
And Jared Vanderbilt.
Oh, okay, yeah. This is a stacked team.
And Kevin Knox was the leading scorer.
Whoa.
Yeah. So he was like very well known early he peaked early, maybe some might say. I don't know. That's my biggest question about Kevin, is whether or not he peaked and it's too late. To put it bluntly, I don't know where we are with him, because he, like I said, so much attention in high school, lived up to it, went to a really good Kentucky team, played really well, led them in scoring, started all his games. He averaged 32 minutes a game. He had 15.6 points, 5.4 rebounds, shot 34% from three. So not, you know, great, but also not terrible. Mm-hmm. And then he chose to enter the draft. And he was drafted, and this could be where it all changed. So 2018, he was taken number 9 by the Knicks. This is the same draft year as Anfernee and Drew Eubanks, just for reference. He was booed by the Knicks, you know, at the draft. This is, you know, it was in New York.
As is tradition.
Right, exactly. And he was ready for it. Some think that he may have already had a promise and knew, you know, where he was going, because he was really ready with his answers about being prepared to being booed. And, you know, he said, Kristaps Porzingis texted him right away and was like, hey, that happens to all of us. And, you know,
oh, yeah,
you're going to be great.
Yeah. Porzingis was on the Knicks then.
Yeah. So
it was like a lifetime ago.
That was the team that he got drafted to. He was chosen right after Colin Sexton and right before Mikal Bridges. So that's where he was in there. So the Knicks at that time, okay, that team was a really bad team. They were 17-65. So he gets drafted into this team starring Mario Hezonja, Noah Vonleh. Wesley Matthews was on that team for a little while. So we had all kinds of former Portland players.
Are any of these guys still in the league?
Wesley is.
Wes is.
And but like Noah Vonleh made an appearance last year, I think. And I think Mario's like crushing it overseas.
Yeah, he's playing in Greece, I think.
As he should be.
Vonleh was like, I think he was playing with the Celtics for a second.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So that's the team that drafted him. And at the time they had Fizdale, and then not long after that, they didn't have Fizdale. And then Tom Thibodeau came in. So he was drafted into a situation where I just don't know if he was, if any, who could survive that.
Also, it's not like the Knicks are like known for being good, a good organization for developing young players. That's not what they do there. Like yeah. Some teams definitely are that. It's not the Knicks.
Like he had so much promise in high school and college. It just kind of breaks my heart to wonder, like, did he just peak in college and that was it? But, you know, he's a big guy. He's a strong guy. He's not scrawny. You know, he's like, yeah. That's another thing. The Knicks were really mad at him because they said that he was, his draft, like stats and everything said that he was 6'9". And then somebody was like, he's only 6'7". And then they were like, well, he's 6'8", but he's not 6'9". So everybody in New York was mad about his height too, because he shrunk 2 inches and they were all mad about that. But so anyway, while he was with the Knicks, at least his first year, he played for 28 minutes, got 12.8 points, 4.5 rebounds. Year two, that went down to 18 minutes. And then at the end of his fourth year rookie contract, he was traded. So in January 2022, he was traded to Atlanta for Cam Reddish.
Oh.
Isn't that funny?
Wait, really?
Yeah.
For Cam Reddish.
Yeah. So because Cam Reddish started in Atlanta.
Right.
And yeah. So they were traded for each other in January of 2022.
And he eventually made his way to the Knicks too. Oh no, you said that's how he got to the Knicks.
Yeah, that's how we got to the Knicks.
Oh. What a weird okay.
They were traded for each other. Isn't that weird? And now here they are both Trailblazers. But they were traded for each other. Cam played out the rest of his, you know, rookie contract and then signed with Detroit. And so that is where Portland got him from. He was actually playing in Detroit when he was part of that multi-team deal. So it's just a mystery to me, like what happened to Kevin Knox. And a couple other things, like another thing that I learned along with Florida geography is that the Knicks have like 9 gazillion podcasts. Oh my God, they have so many podcasts about the Knicks. But I listened to a bunch of episodes of Locked on Knicks where they talked about Kevin Knox. And no one doubted how hard he worked. People talking about him were sure that he was playing as hard as he could and was doing everything that was asked of him. And they just thought it was a matter of just not fitting with the coach, falling out of the coach's favor and rotation, and also questioning, like you were saying earlier, like, you know, who was developing him. It just seems like such a sad waste, because like I said, he just came out of high school and college like so high, and if he could have been with somebody who really developed him a lot better, I think that we would be looking at a different player. But right now he's sitting on the end of the bench of the Portland, barely even able to crack the rotation and only getting garbage time, which just makes me so sad.
Yeah. Sometimes I wonder how many players like never quite make the leap because of where they got drafted to, because some teams are just historically not good at developing players into good NBA players. And other, you know, some teams go out, what they do is they like buy those players. You know, they trade for them, they sign them, like after they've already been developed by somebody else. Like I think about like the Lakers, like they love to like, you know, put their core together of like bankable stars and then put whatever else around them, you know, with the pennies left over after they spent big on those guys. But they're not out there developing those guys for themselves, like from the draft. They're getting made products to them. And the Knicks, I have a lot of mixed feelings about the Knicks, because we watched a lot of Knicks basketball because my dad's from New York. And so, you know, we would watch, you know, Knicks in the East and Blazers in the West, and that's just what a miserable franchise.
But they better make the playoffs. They need to make the playoffs. We are the biggest Knicks fans right now.
That's right. We are. Josh Hart will do right by us. He loves us. He said so.
He's going to get us to the playoffs and get us that draft pick.
I could really imagine though that like, he would that was a really miserable team. The Fizdale team was a really miserable team. Mm-hmm. And then like Tom Thibodeau has such a strong, like, he has such a strong style that mm-hmm. if he decides you're like not a guy who can play his style, I can imagine just like, and now you're relegated to the end of the bench and I will play you in garbage time if I need you or if I need your fouls or something. You know what I mean? Like he likes what he likes and he didn't get, you know, like Kevin Knox was already there. Mm-hmm. Like he
wasn't one of Thibodeau's guys. Yeah.
Yeah. And so I can imagine him not really getting a fair shake because he's like, you're not going to play my style. I don't really, there's nothing for me to do with you here.
Yeah. And then by the time he got to Atlanta, I mean, they're kind of there. They got their own mess going on the last couple of years.
Boy, do they,
you know, talk about another franchise that, you know, we're not, you know, so, and he was only there for half a season. So like how much could they do with him? And I just would love to know that he is gonna get a fair shake. And the other thing about him that I thought was odd, and I don't necessarily know that this is related, he's a really good interview, and it is really hard to find interviews of him. And you know, it's a bummer because like he's really enjoyable to listen to, and like I went down this whole rabbit hole of from the various different high school events, you know, the Jordan Classic and the McDonald's All-American, a couple of ones where he and his other players his age were followed around with cameras, and they mm-hmm. were like funny and entertaining and like just fun to watch. And I just feel like he just kind of fell off the face of the earth, which is kind of a bummer, which is why I like just so want him to at least get a chance in Portland or somewhere, or trade him somewhere where they will actually develop him. Because I don't know if it's too late or not. Like, you know, he's been like marinating for 4 years now.
I just looked at his Wikipedia article just to get like a little idea of like what his career has looked like. And like on those crappy, on the Fizdale teams, he was playing like 65 games. And then like after he left New York, he played 17 games in Atlanta, 42 in Detroit. I mean, obviously the Detroit one, he probably played every game in Detroit because that, you know, he was traded partway through that season, but like 13 games for New York in his last season there. Like, so that season, the 2020,
yeah, he was out of the rotation by then.
2021, 2022, he played 13 games in New York and 17 games in Atlanta, and that is it.
Mm-hmm.
Like, he was already out of favor.
And he hasn't had a lot of injuries. He's been pretty durable, which is something that the Blazers might like. There's one more kind of cool thing about him that I just wanted to share before we wrap it up. In a couple of years ago, I'm not exactly sure when the donation was actually made, but it was just finally officially opened. But he donated $2 million to his high school to redo their field house. And
whoa, that's granted, a lot of money.
Granted, it's named after him now. Sure. But $2 million on a guy on a rookie contract. Granted, it was a high rookie contract because he was a top 10 pick. But still, no. $2 million. And it looks like, and I was trying to figure out, was it like one of those $2 million where it's like you get $200,000 for 10 years or whatever. But it looks like he just donated the money to them. And I just thought that was really cool of him. And he just seems really proud and really grateful about the time that he spent at his school, and just, you know, truly wanted to give back something that would be useful for everybody there.
That's actually so awesome. It reminds me, remember Alan Crabb did the same thing at his high school?
Mm-hmm.
But like that was after we
after
had
he got his
pockets with like $70 million. So yeah. It just doesn't quite hit the same as a guy who's on his first contract and may never get a second.
Yeah. He was making around $4 to $4.5 million. It averages out to like $4.5 million a year for his particular rookie contract. So half of his earnings for 1 year, you know, is what he donated to that.
That's a lot, especially when, like, you know, this is his like first job, I guess you could say. Like, it's his first job, and he might not get to go and play it for, or, you know, do this job for very long. You just don't know. And anyway, yeah. Oh, this is an interesting thing that I just learned. He is signed to Puma.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't think I
Well,
it's rare to be signed to Puma.
So when he signed for Puma, it was during a time where Puma was making a big push to land the brand new guys coming in. They were not trying to sign established stars. They were trying to get the brand new guys coming in. And Kevin Knox, again, was like, there was a lot of potential and a lot of hope for him at the beginning. And I just feel like sending him to New York, just like, you know, what do you call it when you blew out that flame? Extinguished that flame.
Yeah.
Or certainly didn't make it burn as bright as it maybe could have.
Yeah, that seems right. Like, also the NBA and New Balance, it's like, it's Kawhi is New Balance, and like, I don't know if anyone else is.
Yeah, and then Steph is Under Armour, right?
Yeah, I think that's right. Yeah, that's right.
But Puma tried to actually get like some cool young dudes, and they chose Kevin Knox. Also, I would say about Kevin's Instagram feed, a lot of good fashion. He's got some, we got a lot of guys who are not shirking in the fashion department. So that is exciting. I went on, maybe you'll like this because you play more video games than I do, i.e. you play video games and I don't. He had a Fortnite blazer. He's really into Fortnite. And so
Is he still in a Fortnite? That was like 2 years ago.
In 2017 when he was drafted.
Oh yeah, yeah, okay.
Or everybody 18, was in Fortnite. Whatever it was. 2018, yeah. He had it in the liner of his suit. So I'm hoping for a renaissance for Kevin Knox. I'm not going to hold my breath, but I just, every time he goes in, I'm happy. That's another thing that'll sustain me is when he goes in. That and my ring. Boy, I'm kind of sad.
No, I love it. And I love seeing the new guys. I love seeing these guys develop. Even if they don't stay here, I love seeing them do well here. Just because I want guys, everyone who comes to Portland, I don't want us to be their last stop on their way out of the NBA. And it feels like we are a lot of some guys' last stop.
Yeah.
The Mario Hezonias of the world.
Yeah, but he's having a good time in Greece. We did get a question about Kevin Knox from our friend D on Twitter.
Okay.
Alquantarade. Is their at name Alquan Tarade? I'm sorry, I'm like killing that name. Anyway, they asked, if you have time next episode, please speak on Kevin Knox prospects. I was surprised Portland chose him plus 2 second rounders over Wiseman, especially with their lack of depth at center. But they seem committed to Nurkic despite his injury history. Yeah, I thought that was interesting too. You know, that Wiseman was involved in that, and Portland maybe could have been in on them, but I'm guessing they maybe didn't want somebody with all the baggage of Wiseman. I don't know. What do I know about these things? What do you think?
Well, the obvious thing to me, I guess, it's a good question. If Wiseman was truly available, which I don't know if that was like, you know, kind of the reason why Detroit was there to begin with. The obvious thing to me is that the Blazers management over the last few years have really talked about finding guys who fit the right timeline. And Wiseman is fresh, you know, and he's going to take development, and he's not probably on the timeline that they want to be really contending on. So that would be the only reason why I would think, who knows, his ceiling might be a lot higher than Nurk's, but if it's not higher than Nurk's in the next 2 years, like, is it really worth, like, what it might have cost you more, you know, to get into that trade than what it cost you? Like, they basically were like deciding to get rid of Gary. Might have cost them more to get Wiseman as opposed to Kevin Knox in this trade. Like, I don't know. If he was even really truly available, like, I could see why those particulars might not really shake out in the Blazers' favor, even if they thought he was going to be really good eventually.
I don't know if it looks like it to you, and maybe this is actually going to be my take for the week, but them not adding depth at center really just was super telling to me that they're not trying to win. And I mean, obviously they're not going to try to win the championship, but they're not even trying to get into the playoffs, you know, to like, because, you know, Drew has had back issues all season. And if Drew goes down, then there's only Trendon.
And he's 6'8".
And that's it. And like, it was just shocking to me that they, you know, that they didn't, or in, you know, in the buyout season, didn't haven't added any height. You know, for a hot minute, there was the New Orleans Noel to Portland, but that obviously didn't pan out.
I always wondered, actually, this is maybe an interesting thing that I hadn't really considered. Like, so the Blazers never really made it sound like they were trying to win this season. And I think that the fans felt that way for some reason. And I'm not super duper sure why.
Well, they got that hot start.
Right. They had the hot start. But like, I think maybe that's why. But like, no one ever actually said we're trying to do that this season. Mm-hmm. And they made it sound like they were still in the process. This was still a work in progress roster. And so I think that if that was like their original plan, it's not that weird to me that they wouldn't be trying to, like, you know, win big this year and like sign guys for like the rest of the season so they can get into eighth mm-hmm. in the playoffs or something. Like, I maybe like the best case scenario for this team is to just miss the playoffs, rest some guys, and then make the right moves in the summer. And one of the things I keep thinking about is some of the guys who are playing right now is like, maybe what they're also doing is developing them for trade value.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know.
I think they're doing a lot of those things. I guess I thought they would make the playoffs. I thought they were going to go back to the playoffs. I thought we were missing the playoffs for 1 year and that was it. And that everything would, you know, at least gel enough that they could get to the playoffs. And yeah. Even if it's through the play-in tournament, I didn't necessarily think they were going to get like fourth or whatever, but I did think that they were going to make it to the playoffs. I thought that like, it was understood that we were going to put up with like blatant tanking for a half a season. And then everything was going to get back on track because we had Damian Lillard and we had enough talent around him that Damian could drag them to the playoffs. And three of their top six players are on the bench right now, and two of them, no word about why they're still there.
This is a really good lead into what my take is this week. I just want
excellent
to know.
Okay, well, we can do takes. We can do takes first if you want, and then go back to social media player of the week to wrap it up.
No, let's go to social media player of the week. We'll do it the right way. I'm just telling you, I've got a take that fits right in with this conversation.
Excellent. What did I say my take was? I think I just said my take, but now I don't remember what it. This is why I can't have takes. Maybe I'll remember it later.
Let's talk about social media player of the week, shall we?
Yeah.
Okay. So, social media player of the week. One, for anyone who's been paying attention, Justice Winslow brought back the whiteboard. March 1st was our first Justice Winslow whiteboard in, I don't know, months.
Yeah, he stopped kind of around, I think, the time that he got injured.
Yes. And his first whiteboard back was an Instagram story that said, losses turn into pain, then they become advantages.
From your mouth to God's ears, Justice.
Yeah. I hope that he's trying to be an Nostradamus on this one, because I really hope that is true for the Blazers.
Okay, so I was kind of hoping when he launched the whiteboard that he would redo it so that he would be a little bit more clear about who said this stuff. Because
right.
You look at the whiteboard. So for people who are like, what are you talking about? Every day, Justice Winslow writes an inspirational quote on the whiteboard, but it's just like words in quotes with the date. So it's not like, so it's like, is he quoting himself? Did he write this? Did he read it somewhere and he wrote it? I don't know. I thought maybe like, given the weeks that he took off, he might think about that, but that,
attributing
alas,
his quotes.
Yes. Alas, who knows who said losses turn into pain, then they become advantages. But very nice of Justice to share them with us so that we can be as inspired as he is.
Mm-hmm. I agree. Our second nominee for this week's Social Media Player of the Week is Jabari Walker reposting someone's TikTok of him interacting with a fan. And the TikTok is adorable. It's from the fan's like POV and they're doing like a handshake. And I don't know. Jabari's just, I think there's something this like this is just like lovely and warm and light about Jabari that I like so much. And I loved seeing this interaction with the fan.
Yeah, it's cute. They're like doing a handshake thing. And then Jabari goes back. And he's like, let's do it again. And like gets it right. And like the fan is like clearly thrilled the first time and then even more excited the second time. And yeah, Jabari is great. And he gets rebounds. Like,
yeah.
My kingdom for a rebound. Put in Jabari to get some rebounds.
Yeah, we really are suffering on the boards.
Okay, so that was a good one. What else do we have?
And the third one we have... No, we have two more. Behind the scenes pregame with Keon on TikTok. I did not watch this because I can't get TikTok to work because I'm old.
So he's continuing to up his game. Keon is up to like 9 TikTok videos, I think, at this point. And it's just him pregame, like driving to the practice facility, walking into the practice facility, getting treatment, getting shots up. And it's just called like behind the scenes pregame. But, you know, once again, and want to recognize these guys for stepping up their game in any way. And Keon has definitely been trying to do that. And it was nice.
Yes. And the last one is wise words from Dame.
Because from of course.
Instagram, mm-hmm. Right?
Mm-hmm.
I don't remember this now. Now I have to look at it again.
Yes, it was. Here, I've got it. The man who loves to walk will walk further than the man who loves the destination.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
The man who loves to walk will walk further than the man who loves the destination. Again, no attribution. So maybe that came from Dame. Maybe it came from Justice. Maybe he got it from one of Justice's whiteboards. I don't know.
That feels a lot to me like him saying like playing basketball just to win a championship is missing out on a lot of what's great about basketball.
Mm-hmm. Well, and I also like was trying to read. I'm constantly trying to figure out how does he really feel about this two timeline thing, this him playing with these young guys, because people with the Golden Warriors have been discussing how two timelines doesn't work. It doesn't work to have Steph and it doesn't work to have these younger guys like Wiseman trying to be developed at the same time. So I'm trying to figure out whether or not Dame is all about this, you know, trying to bring along the young guys the same as, you know, he's in his prime. And, you know, everything that we've seen is all about how much Damian is committed to helping others get better. And this should be, you know, an extension of that. But I would love for him to like say that exactly straight up. Like, yes, I love playing with these young guys because I'm helping them develop. But he hasn't said that yet, which is fine. And so I'm always like reading into everything he says. You see, saying like what he loves to walk is like, it's not just that, you know, he likes, you know, being in Portland and trying and being Portland's guy, but he likes everything that goes along with trying to get there, including the development of like him being a part of the development of the younger players.
I forget where he said this recently, but he was talking about how like, you know, like basketball is also like team dinners and bus rides and all this other stuff. And like, you know, the goal is to win a championship too, obviously, but like, you can't forget that those things also make, you know, playing basketball
mm-hmm.
great.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Says guys who got stuck on the plane together and apparently they got delayed again last night.
That's right.
Not as bad. Okay. So who do you think we should give it to this week?
I kind of want to give it to Jabari.
Okay.
But I'm open to other opinions.
I mean, Justice coming back with a whiteboard.
It is kind of big. That is kind of like a bigger event than just the post.
Mm-hmm. And I loved Jabari's and I love that he shared it, but he wasn't the original creator of it. That's so true. A tiny little bit less credit for that. Although I think it should definitely count as an honorable mention, but I think Justice's is a little bit more game changing. It's like, I'm back. Maybe that means he's going to come back on the court soon.
That's probably right. Maybe. Maybe. Probably not. But maybe. Who knows? We haven't been hearing about it.
We can always hope.
People forgot to like we I don't I haven't seen anyone seriously like barking up anyone's like tree trying to get answers about justice either from like the press. So I don't know.
Just silence. It's just weird. It's just weird. Should we share our takes?
Yeah.
Oh, so are we gonna give it to
We'll give it to justice. I agree. We'll give it to justice. And then we'll share takes. Can I go first?
Yes.
Because I want to say this now while I'm thinking about it. My take is, you know, everybody has been complaining, like, what does Nas Little have to do to start? What does Nas Little have to do to start? My take is that they're not playing Nas Little because they're not trying to win this year. And they don't want anyone who they might want to be potentially involved in a trade with to see how good he is.
Oh, interesting.
That they're hiding him a little
interesting.
Bit.
Interesting.
So he's had some injuries, which might put some question marks out there, but he's on a very favorable long-term contract. And they know that, what if they know that they like him and they don't want guys that they want or teams that they want to get involved in trades with to be like, what about that Nas Little guy?
Mm-hmm.
And just to be like, no, sorry, he's not touchable. Like, so you showcase the other guys that you're maybe a little bit more willing to part with because you know what you have with Nas is like pretty good and you want to keep him around for your like the team that you want to put around Dame to contend for a title.
Mm-hmm.
That's my take.
Okay. I don't think I agree with all of the aspects of it. I actually like him off the bench. Yeah. I like him not starting. I also think as much as I love him and his energy, I think is contagious. He still makes a lot of mistakes. And I don't necessarily think he's ready to start. You know, I think just about anybody could start because, you know, if you're inserted into the starting lineup and everybody else is the best player on the team and you're maybe like, you know, it's the old Noah Vonleh treatment, right? You could put in somebody and they can learn really fast. But I just don't think Nas is there. And I do like his size, but I love him off the bench. And he seems really content with that. And I don't mean like he seems like he doesn't want to start, but the way he's embraced the role of have you noticed he's a big bench cheerleader? He's been doing a lot of bench cheerleading. He's been giving some like really great like bench cheers. Mm-hmm. And I don't know. I just really like him off the bench. And I don't know yet that his skill set that he's shown, and maybe they're doing such a good job of hiding it. That's why we haven't seen it yet. So maybe it could be true, but I just don't. I still think he makes a lot of mistakes, and I can see why I don't necessarily agree with the coach, but I can see why the coach is not starting him.
I don't necessarily think that they, let me back this up. I don't necessarily think that they like want him for the starting lineup. I don't necessarily
like amount of
think,
minutes.
Like, I don't think they necessarily want him like, you know, later on down the road to be a starter. I think that you could start him on this team, but why would you, if you're not trying to win now, hide him? Mm-hmm. Because if you want to keep him in his great bench role, that's fine. But like, why, even though he's good enough to be inserted into this starting lineup with this team, why put him out there? If you don't, because you don't want people to see how important and what a good role he can play for your team. Like that's my take is really that he's not starting because they don't want to show too much of him and they don't want to show too much of how good he can be so that people aren't asking about him. I mean, they might still ask about him anyway, but if you see something that you like, that you want to keep around starting bench, whatever, you don't want to show him off. If you're going to be involved in trades this summer,
you know, I am super here for it. If they are that into Nas, I think that would be awesome. And you know, those are the things that I think of all the time is like little devious ways to to trick everybody else to not think. So I think it is entirely entirely possible.
Okay, tell me your take.
My take was that the fact that they didn't go for any centers at all or even apparently try is that they are truly not trying to make the playoffs. You know,
you just can't just send Drew out there.
I mean, bless his heart. That guy is playing so hard that he's just outmatched every night.
So he's like, you can't play him for an entire game.
Like, no.
He can't play 40 minutes.
No, and you can't play Trendon 48 minutes. Like, it's just, it's not fair to either of them. And so, like, I don't think that, it's kind of like, I feel weird that it's like, there's no in between. It's either you're like gunning for the playoffs or you have to be as bad as you possibly can be.
Mm-hmm.
So I still think they want to win, but I just think that getting into the lottery is going to take care of itself. And they made sure.
Yeah. So let's all just be Knicks fans for the next few
and months. Our beloved Kings.
Oh, right. And our Kings.
That's who I'm rooting for. The Kings and the Knicks.
Boy, the times have changed.
I know. They may have ruined Kevin Knox, but for this season, we are big New York Knicks fans, so that we can get that lottery pick.
I feel like we're like in the late 90s again or something, back mm-hmm. when those teams had like something to offer last go around.
Yeah, I said draft pick, or I said lottery pick. I meant draft pick.
Oh God, it's we'll snowing get our at my own. House.
It's snowing.
At my house it is. Oh, I don't know if it is at yours.
Goodness. Oh my goodness. Well, we should wrap it up so you can go start shoveling and or watch the Blazers in Orlando. Wonder how they're doing.
It's okay. It's going okay. I kind of forgot that they have Bol Bol in Orlando. Oh, and I'm like, oh yeah, because we have the size for that.
Oh God. Yeah, that should be fair. Yeah. Well, let's wrap it up. Where can people find you should they wish to find you on Twitter?
At Rose L. Harding on Twitter and Instagram, and in the We Have a Take Discord. Tara, where can they find you?
They can find me at TCBBIGGS on Twitter, and you can find the We Have a Take podcast at We Have a Take. Thank you, everyone, for listening. Thank you, Eric Peterson, for awesome music. And yeah, check out the link to join the Discord. And Rose, thank you so much. It's always great to talk to you, and we'll talk to you next week.